Hey everyone, it's so great to see everyone. Looking forward to learning together this morning, our Tehillim class. And again, I hope always that you're able to find the relevancy in the Tehillim that we study. But today I think you're in for a real treat because as opposed to last week, which was a little bit difficult to go through, I think many of us would admit to and agree upon, this week's chapter of Tehillim is extremely relevant for two reasons, and I'm really excited to share it with you. I hope you'll find it just as meaningful as I did preparing it. We're going to do chapter 81 of Tehillim, which happens to be the Shir Shel Yom, the Song of the Day of Thursday. And I don't know how it took us so long to study this chapter of Tehillim. I'm not sure how that happened, but it was quite fortuitous that we were able to study it today, this morning, and I'll explain to you in just a little bit why that's the case. Chapter 81 of Tehillim, which I will get up on my screen shortly, but chapter 81 of Tehillim... No, I don't want that. There you go. Chapter 81 of Tehillim is unique in that it is a mizmor of renewal. It's going to talk a lot about the concept of renewal, the fact that our Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us the capacity, the ability to start again, which obviously has a lot of relevancy to the time of year that you and I are living in. Now, it's not just that it's a song of the day of Thursday. It's not just that it's about renewal. But in the Beis HaMikdash, this song was read on Rosh Hashanah. So here we go. We have a song of the day on Thursday. It's Thursday. It's a song of Rosh Hashanah. We're approaching Rosh Hashanah. And it's a song about an ability to start again. Who doesn't want to start again during Elul, approach Rosh Hashanah as a fresh, new person? So here we go. Chapter 81 of Tehillim. Lam Natseach Alegitis Le'asaf. Now, Asaf is one of the composers of Tehillim. Okay, and Gitis, if you look in Rashi, Rashi tells us that Gitis is a kli shir. It's a form of a musical instrument. But you and I know better than that, because you and I have been learning Tehillim for long enough. And you and I know that in our study, you don't hear me. I'm muted. Am I really muted? I shouldn't be muted anymore. Have I been talking to myself this whole time? That's amazing. We're studying chapter 81 of Tehillim. And chapter 81 of Tehillim is all about renewal. It's about our opportunity to renew again, our opportunity for Hashem to give us the ability to start again. It's the song of the day of Thursday, and it's recited in the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah. So it's an extremely relevant chapter of Tehillim. I'm not sure how it took us so long to study this, but let's jump right in. Lam Natseach Alegitis Le'asaf. It's a song of the Gitis for Asaf. Now, Asaf is the person, he's the composer, but what's Gitis? So Rashi tells us that Gitis is kli shir. It's a musical instrument. But you and I know better than that. Because you and I know that Gat, we've studied before, is a wine press. And if you recall from the last time we studied this, what is it unique about a wine press? When you look at a wine press, right? At that moment, when the grapes are on the wine press, that is the lowest point for the grapes possible. They are being trampled on. Those who know that I Love Lucy scene, right? They're being trampled on and stepped on and being made into mincemeat. But you and I also know that it's through that process that grapes go through that they actually become something much more beautiful. They become this delicious wine. And so, Lamanaseach ala gitis. When we're singing ala gitis, we're singing in the moment when we're feeling trampled on. In other words, we're not yet that beautiful wine. We're that disgusting grapes that are being trampled on. And yet, we're singing the melodious music, even in the wine press. Now, that in and of itself is a beautiful idea, is, I think, a transformational idea. Our obligation, our opportunity, I should say, to sing, even in those moments when you and I feel like the grapes in the wine press, nonetheless, we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's no discrepancy between when we feel on high and when we feel like we are in the gut, when we feel like we're in the wine press. So, Lamanaseach ala gitis le'asaf. What are we doing in that gat, in that wine press? Harninu lelohim uzenu. Hariu lelohei Yaakov. What are we doing? We're singing joyous songs. We are very happy. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that, what are we talking about here? We're talking about Rosh Hashanah. We're talking about singing out in song to Rosh Hashanah. Rav Hirsch points out here, I think magnificently, that what is unique about this pasuk of Harninu LaHashem Uzeinu, that Hashem does not want men to worship Him, not in gloom and sadness, but with joy and good cheer. In other words, Judaism isn't supposed to make you sad. Judaism isn't a doom and gloom type of religion. Yes, there are serious sides to Judaism, but ultimately we are supposed to celebrate our Judaism. We are supposed to practice our Judaism with joyousness and with happiness. And so says Rav Hirsch, Harnilu Lelohim Uzeinu, we're singing out very happy and joyous song to Hashem, even though, what are we talking about, says the Gemara? Even though we're talking about Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, it's not a contradiction to both be scared and happy at the same time. That's the chiddush. That's the novelty of these psukim. Harninu Lelohim Uzeinu Harri Lelohei Yaakov, we're singing out joyous song to Hashem. Suuzimra usnu sof kinur im navel. Again, you're taking musical instruments, you're playing them, you're singing on Hashem. And what are we doing unique on Rosh Hashanah? Tiku bachodesh shofar bakese leyom chagenu. We are blowing the shofar. What's bachodesh? The Mefarshim here point out that on the new month, which is the only holiday on the Jewish calendar that falls out on a new month, it is only Rosh Hashanah. So tiku bachodesh shofar, on Rosh Hashanah we blow the shofar, bakese liyom chagenu. What's the kese? So we'll have to see in a little bit. But nonetheless, we are singing out in joy song on Rosh Hashanah. Now, as I pointed out, that's part of the dichotomy that you and I feel on Rosh Hashanah itself. On the one hand, Rosh Hashanah is a day of judgment. It's a very serious day. It's a somber day. It's a scary day. On the other hand, there are elements of Rosh Hashanah which are very joyous and very pleasant. We have yontif meals, we sing festive songs, right? We get dressed up in our finest clothing, right? So how do you resolve this contradiction between the solemnity of Rosh Hashanah and the joyousness of Rosh Hashanah? I want to share with you a mashal, a parable, that I've shared in the past in different contexts. I share it at my Rosh Hashanah table every single year because I myself find it difficult to reconcile. Mankind finds it hard to both be scared and happy at the same time, to be sad and joyous at the same time. So how do we do it? So I'll give you the following parable. The parable is about a father and son, very religious Hasidic father and son, grew up in Poland before the Holocaust, and both went through the Holocaust. Both were sent to the concentration camps, and both assume that the other person dies in the concentration camp. They get separated, and both assumes the other one died. Now, the son escapes the concentration camp and ends up living with a Catholic family in Poland. And so he's raised essentially as a Catholic, completely non-Jewish, completely assimilated, knows he's Jewish, but quite assimilated. After the war, they both immigrate to America, to the Lower East Side. And again, neither one knows the other person's alive. All of a sudden, they're walking down the street of the Lower East Side one day, and they see each other. And on the one hand, you have this father who survived the concentration camps with his faith, his religion intact. He's wearing a kapata, Hasidic garb, a hat, looking very religious with payas and a beard. And on the other hand is this son walking towards him, this son who, to no fault of his own, never grew up religious, basic awareness that he was Jewish at all. And he is sitting there with whatever imagery you want, with the ripped jeans and the green hair and the nose ring, whatever imagery helps you with our story. And the two of them are walking towards each other. And they see each other. And if you freeze the frame at that moment in time, what's the son feeling? So on the one hand, the son is overwhelmed with joy. The son can't contain himself. Here he thought his father had died. Now he realizes he's alive. What greater joy is there in the world than being reconnected with a parent? And at that same moment of joy and exhilaration, he looks at his father, he looks at himself, he looks at his father's faith, he realizes how irreligious he became, and he's filled at that moment with feelings of shame and fear and embarrassment at what he could have been and what he became. That frozen moment is exactly what you and I feel on Rosh Hashanah. That on the one hand, we come before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and we're ecstatic. If you think about the Yom Narayim, it's something we crave for all year round. We crave for closeness and access to Hashem. And Hashem comes along and says, I'm going to give you 2, 10 days of the year where you can access me, where you'll have a closer relationship with me than any other time during the year. That's exciting. That's amazing. That's something I would sign up for. And yet at that moment of closeness to Hashem, when we're most intimately connected with our Creator and our Source, and we come face to face with the Almighty Himself, you and I are also overwhelmed by feelings of shame and embarrassment, because we realize what this year could have been, and we realize what we become instead. And so that's how you reconcile conflicting emotions at the exact same moment. That's how on Rosh Hashanah you could both be afraid and you can sing out songs of joyousness. And so on Rosh Hashanah we can go from one moment of saying Unisana Toka of who's going to live and who's going to die, and literally 5 seconds later in the Machzor, we could be singing and bipping and bopping and joys, depending on which minyan you're going to daven in this year. And there's no contradiction, because they both come from that same core feeling, and that is a closeness to Hashem. That's these psukim of Harninu Elohim Uzeinu Ari LeYakov. We're singing out, we're joyous to Hashem. Su'uzim Ra'osnu Sof, we're playing musical instruments, and we're even blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right? Because all of this making noise, all of this joyousness, all of this happiness comes from that feeling of closeness to Hashem. The Meforshim point out, I believe it's a Rashi here, I'm just looking at my notes. Rashi here points out that this is, one of the Meforshim, points out that this is the Pasuk in Nehemiah. It's Rashi. This is the Pasuk in Nehemiah, where Nehemiah tells the Jewish people that on Rosh Hashanah you should go home and you should have a festive meal. Isn't that a contradiction? That you should go home and you should have a festive meal? We should be so confident on Rosh Hashanah. So yeah, that's exactly what we are supposed to feel. We're supposed to feel so close to Hashem that we feel the confidence to recognize that whatever the next year brings, and I don't know what it's going to bring, there are no guarantees, but I know it's what Hashem wants. That's the confidence that I feel in Rosh Hashanah. That is the celebratory notion that you and I are able to experience. Now, what's interesting is, and I'll point this out again, we're going to get to it in a second, but as I said in the beginning, when I may have been muted, which I apologize for, but this is a story of renewal. This is a story about the capacity that Hashem gives us to start again. And isn't it amazing that the tool, the mechanism that you and I use to reflect that renewal is the shofar. When we blow the shofar during Elul, and I'm going to speak about this in the rabbi's class on Shabbos, and when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, it's a recognition that God gave us the ability to renew ourselves, that God gave us the ability to start again. Now, how do I know? I keep on referencing this renewal idea. How do I know that this chapter is about renewal? So number one, the Radak tells me that. The Radak tells me, Zeha Mizmor Ne'mar Al Yetzias Mitzrayim, that this Mizmor, this chapter of Tehillim, is referencing the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what specifically are we referencing in this story? V'niskar bo bitel ha'avoda me'avosenu shehaya b'Rosh Hashanah. That what happened in Egypt was that before the actual redemption, the Jewish people stopped having to do the backbreaking work. Already from the time that the 10 plagues started, say Chazal, the backbreaking work had stopped. And when did the backbreaking work stop? On Rosh Hashanah. And it was at that moment when the Jewish people went through literally a 180 reversal. Yesterday, backbreaking work. Today, this isn't so bad. Peace and quiet. I don't have to get up so early in the morning. That reversal happened, says the Radak and other Meforshim, that reversal happens on Rosh Hashanah. And so Rosh Hashanah is a day of liberation. It's a day of renewal. It's a day when we reflect our ability to start again. That's Tiku Bachodesh Shofar, Bachodesh, on the first of the month, referencing renewal. You and I blow the shofar, Bakese Liyom Chagenu. Again, it's referred to as the hidden holiday because it's a different holiday from all of the other holidays in the sense that it is the only one that falls out on the first day of the month. On Rosh Chodesh, Rashi says, Yom Muad Kavua Lakach. It is a day designated for redemption. It is a day designated for renewal. And what are we going to say about this shofar? Kichok hu, Kichok Yisrael hu, Mishpat Lelohei Yaakov. It is a chok, it is a law for the Jewish people, a mishpat, a day of judgment for the children of Yaakov. What does it mean that we refer to the shofar as a chok? So Rashi says, Ki chok hu li Yisrael meisa kadosh baruch hu lipkoa ba'oso hayom, v'hu yom ha-mishpat la kadosh baruch hu. Says Rashi, it is a chok. What does a chok literally mean? It means that you and I don't understand what the meaning is behind it. Right? Ultimately, you and I can come up with a million reasons why we blow the shofar. But you know why we blow the shofar? Says Rashi, says the Malbim, and says others. Because Hashem commands us to. Right? We don't understand why the shofar works. We don't really understand why, out of all instruments in the world, God chose a shofar to be blown on Rosh Hashanah. We do it because that's what Hashem asks of us. Right? Every now and then you'll have this the same experience with a child or a spouse or a parent, where let's say a spouse will ask you to do something. And you'll say, I just don't get it. Like, why is that so important to you? And the spouse will look back and say, does it really matter? Right? The fact that I asked you to do something, shouldn't that alone be reason enough why you do it for me? Right? When you love someone, when you care about someone, yeah, it should make sense to us. But ultimately, you're doing it for the person because they asked them. Right? Because you love them and they asked you as a favor to do this for them. Right? So do we really know why a shofar on Rosh Hashanah makes sense? Yeah, we all know the 10 reasons given over by Rabbeinu Nissim and right? But ultimately, we do it as a sign of love to Hashem. Hashem says, this is what's meaningful for me. Right? Taking out the trash is what's meaningful for me. Making your bed is what's meaningful for me. Washing the dishes is what's meaningful for me. So Hashem asks us to blow us a shofar. That says Rashi. That says the Malbim. Is what it means to be a chok. Says the Rav Hirsch, based on the thesis that you and I are developing, you want to know what the chok is? You want to know what the chok means, something that doesn't make sense? You want to know what doesn't make sense? Exactly what we spoke about earlier. It doesn't make sense that even though this is a day of judgment, it's also a day of festivity. That should not make sense. Right? If you and I were chas v'shalom, faced with a day of judgment, we were being brought into court and it was being decided our fate, my guess is you and I wouldn't throw a party that morning. You and I wouldn't have festive meals and, right? You and I would be shaking and quivering in our boots. That's not what you and I experience on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, there's that confidence. There's that festive nature. There's a joyousness to it. So says Rav Hirsch, that doesn't make sense. It's illogical. That on the day that you and I know that Hashem is judging us, mi yichya u mi yamus, a line this year that will resonate for many of us much more than it ever has in previous years. Mi yichya u mi yamus, mi batsama, mi bara, mi bamageifa, who by a plague, right? We never could have dreamed what these words would have meant to us a year ago. And yet, you finish shul, right? For those who are going to be able to go to shul, you're going to come out, you might schmooze with a friend, tell a joke, you might even have a meal outside if you're living in certain areas where there's less of a concern, right? There's a joyousness to Rosh Hashanah. Says reverse, that makes no sense. That's a chok. That's the ki chok li Yisrael. Mishpat l'lohe Yaakov. Why are we referring to Yaakov here? Yaakov is the name of the Jewish people when they're beaten down, when they're at their lowest point. Again, lamnatzeach ala gitis. Again, the Jewish people are in a lowly state right here. Then we come to what I think is the most important pasuk in this entire chapter. Eidus b'hosef samo. And I'm going to bet you, I shouldn't say that. Many of us say this every single Thursday. I'm venturing to say the majority did not appreciate the words that we are saying. Right? That's my goal here. There's a Rosh Hashanah component. There's also an every single Thursday component. Every single Thursday, I want you to think about these words. Eidus b'hosef samo b'tseiso al eretz mitzrayim. Right, edus. What does edus mean? Edus says ede v'kashot. It's almost like an adornment, right? It's something Hashem placed on behosef. We're talking about Yosef here. Bitseiso me'eretz Mitzrayim when he left Mitzrayim. Says Rashi, b'Rosh Hashanah yatsa Yosef mi beis hasurim. What is Yosef doing here in the middle of a chapter on Rosh Hashanah? Says Rashi, that it was because on Rosh Hashanah, Yosef was taken out of prison. What's Yosef doing here? If we're talking about that this chapter is a chapter about renewal and about the capacity for change, what greater example in Tanakh is there than Yosef HaTzadik? Talk about a story of rags to riches. Yosef gets thrown out by his family, sold into slavery, accused of rape by the king's wife. I mean, it literally doesn't get worse than that. Thrown into a pit. And if you look at the imagery there, it's all down, down, down. Yosef is at the bottom of the pit, literally and figuratively. He is in the gat. Lamnatzeach ala gitis. Yosef is the grapes at the wine press. He is being trampled on and stampeded on and beaten up on. And what happens? Rosh Hashanah, literally out of the blue, completely out of nowhere, Yosef HaTzadik is redeemed. He's given a second chance on life. He's given the opportunity to redo all of his mistakes. The entire second half of Yosef's life is simply tshuva for the first half. How he's going to treat his brother. How he's going to treat his brother vis-a-vis the relationship with his father. That's all tshuva for how he mistreated them beforehand. That's the evolution, the metamorphosis of Yosef HaTzadik. So Yosef, more than anyone in Tanakh, is all about the sudden changes of life. That more, and it's those sudden changes that you and I feel on Rosh Hashanah, both for good and for bad. On Rosh Hashanah, we're reminded of that capacity for redemption, that capacity for renewal. When we say that Hashem is recreating the world on Rosh Hashanah, that should give us all enormous hope this year. Because while things look bleak, and many of us haven't been out of our houses in 5 months, and we're anxious and we're scared and we're uncertain about what the future holds, on Rosh Hashanah we remind ourselves, Zet Tchilas Masecha, this is the creation of the world, and that everything that happened previous year is off the books, and that Hashem is renewing the world completely. That should give us complete hope and optimism and faith, because Yosef was let out of prison on Rosh Hashanah. You and I can be let out of our prisons on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a day of freedom. It's a day that reminds us of just how quickly things can change, of Yeshua Hashem Keherev Ayin. Like in the blink of an eye, Hashem can change the fate of people. And on the one hand, that's extremely exciting. That should fill us with optimism and hope. And instead of dreading Rosh Hashanah this year, I actually think that should make us yearn and look forward for Rosh Hashanah. Because I can't wait for the new slate to wipe out 5780 and to usher in 5781 with musical song and dance. On the other hand, as Rabbi Soloveitchik points out, that also represents our vulnerability on Rosh Hashanah. Because you and I have no clue what's going to be. We have no clue what the judgment's going to be, right? Hashem can renew the world and make it a better place, and we could find a vaccine like that, and we could all be out of this. On the other hand, there are other alternatives to how this can play out, none of which I want to think about particularly, right? So that's both the optimism and the vulnerability that you and I experience. It's all embedded in the story of Yosef HaTzadik. Rav Hirsch points out here that this isn't just talking about Yosef, the person, but Yosef is a microcosm. Yosef is a paradigm for the Jewish people as a whole. Says Rav Hirsch the following. Yosef here is meant to indicate Israel's task to emulate Yosef. You and I are supposed to emulate Yosef. That is to remain faithful to the spiritual and moral truth and purity of its calling, even in the midst of foreign nations and despite constant association with alien influences. Right? What is it that you and I are supposed to tap into? Says the first, not necessarily the concept of renewal, but the notion of being in an exile, being in a foreign land, where there are forces that are antithetical to our Jewish values, and nonetheless, what are we able to do? Always maintain that fidelity to our faith, that fidelity to our relationship with Hashem. That, says Rav Hirsch, is what we're talking about here, that you and I have to be like Yosef, that the Jewish people for eternity have to be like Yosef, that even when we're in foreign environments, we maintain that faith, we maintain that connection. So that's a edus behosef samo. Bitseso al eretz Mitzrayim. We have to be like Yosef as he left Mitzrayim. Now you'll notice, it doesn't say Yosef. It says Hosef. What is Hosef? The Mefarshim point out that Hashem added on the hey to Yosef's name. Because after he did such a great job in Egypt, Hashem essentially associates himself with Yosef. But made no mistake about it, we were talking about Yosef. And Svas lo yadati yeshma, that there was a new language that we've never heard before. Again, different Mefarshim understand this differently. Rashi says that the angel Gabriel comes and he teaches Yosef the 70 languages so that he could be effective in the king's court, right? But what are we most likely talking about? What's this new language, right, that Yosef found himself in an unbelievable position, right? Unbelievable position. And his role was reversed. That's the new language that you and I were imbued with. The language of renewal. The language of the ability to start again. The language of being able to transform ourselves. And that even though things looked so bleak yesterday, things are new now. We're now hearing a new sound. It's a sound of change. It's a sound of the ability to renew ourselves. It's a magnificent pasuk. A deuce bosef samo. Again, a deuce coming from the language of we're adorned. We're adorned with the imagery of Yosef. We're adorned with this new language of don't lose faith. Don't throw in the towel. But we can always change. We can always renew ourselves and renew our faith. Hasirosi misevel shichmo, kapav midud tavorne. Now, this is, in all of our studies of Tehillim, one of the most unique set of psukim that we will study. Rarely will we see a set of psukim like we're about to see. And what makes these psukim so unique is that it's Hashem's talking. We switch to the voice of Hashem in Sefer Tehillim. Now, that might seem not so strange to you, but then you're thinking about Nevi'im. Nevi'im are oftentimes where we switch from our voice or the narrator's voice or the Navi's voice to Hashem's voice. Rarely in Tehillim will the author of the Tehillim switch to representing the voice of Hashem. So you have to picture yourself right now that Hashem is looking every single one of us in the face. And he's talking directly to you. And what is Hashem saying to us? Hasirosi misevel sichmo. I've relieved the burden from your shoulder. Rashi here says, we're talking about the harshness of Mitzrayim. Okay? Me'avdus, right there, from the slavery. Kapav midud tavorna. Right? I have freed you from the dude. What's a dude? A dude, not like, hey dude, but a dude is a basket. A dude is a nice way of saying the menial, trivial tasks. It's the taking out the garbage. It's the washing the dishes. So Hashem says, I've removed all of those burdens from you. In other words, I've freed you of what was holding you back. Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Rav Hirsch says that what's kapav midud tavorna? He translates it as, let his hand stay away from the kettle. Let his hand stay away from the pot. In other words, what Hashem is essentially saying is, Hasirosi misevel shichmo. I have removed the burden from you. In other words, I've taken away the obligation of doing the dishes. But you know what you did? But you wanted to keep your hand there. You wanted to still do those tasks that I said you don't have to do anymore. In other words, Hashem is saying, I gave you the ability to move on, but you were not ready to move on. And so Hashem is essentially looking us in the eyes and saying, let's go. It's time to move on. I've unburdened you of all the things that are holding you back. And again, this can be understood historically, that in Mitzrayim, Hashem literally unburdened us. Or it could be referring to us spiritually. Hashem is saying, when I gave you Rosh Hashanah, I'm giving you the ability to have a clean slate. But you know what you need to be willing to do? You need to be willing to open that door and to walk through it. So many of us are scared of change. So many of us are scared to try new things and to take risks. So many of us are scared of, what if we change? What's that going to look like? Hashem says, I can only give you the door, but you have to be willing to get up and to actually walk through that door. I cannot do that for you. That's the plea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, I have unburdened you. I have given you the ability to unburden yourselves. Whatever's holding you back, it could be anger, it could be anxiety, it could be fear, right? Whatever's holding you back, Hashem says, get rid of it. Let go of it. But you have to be willing to do that, and you have to be willing to walk through that door. And I'll show you why I think we're not just talking physically, but spiritually, in a few psukim. So what does Hashem say? Bitzara karasa ve'achaltsecha. That in distress you called out to me, I answered you. Encha b'seiser ra'am. Right? I answered you loudly. What do the Mefarshim say we are talking about here? That in other words, you may have called out to me quietly. Right? Our prayers are very quiet. You ever think about that? Right? We don't scream. I mean, some sects of Judaism do, but most of us don't. Our Shemona Esrei's are silent. Hashem says, you asked something for me, b'seiser, very quietly. But you know how I answered you? I answered you loudly. Kriyas Yamsuf, right? The 10 plagues, right? I made a loud answer to your very silent prayers. Ev chanchal me merivav sela, and I have tested you in the waters of meriva. In other words, I tested your faithfulness to me. What's sela here? Sela, I'm looking for the parish that says this. Give me 1 second. But sela is an interesting term. Because sela essentially means, right, says Mitzudas David, Rotza Lomar, V'chol kach ad olam, Darche lehoshia be'itzara, right, that this is the way it's going to be. Sela means like, this is always how it's going to be, and this is always how it will be. And it's always going to be that you're going to call out to me, I'm going to answer you, and then I'm going to test you. And I'm going to test your faith, and sometimes you're going to fail, right? We failed at Meimriva. Hashem says, you're not always going to get it right, right? But I'll answer you. And so Hashem again looks at us, in verse 9, and says, Shema Ami. It's like a plea from Hashem. It's amazing. Ve'aida Becha, says Mitzudat Zion. Ve'aida means that I'm going to warn you. I don't like this translation, I'm admonishing you. It's a warning. Ve'aida, I'm going to warn you. Yisrael im tishmali. All you have to do, Hashem says, is listen to me. I'll give you the salvation. I'll give you the renewal. You just have to listen to me. It's so simple. And what do you have to do? Lo yebecha elzar v'lo sishtach avel enechar. Don't serve foreign gods. Who are the foreign gods that we're talking about here? On the pshat level, yes, we're talking about idolatry. But the Gemara in Masechah Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Hei Amid Beis, tells us this is the Yetzer Hara. Right? Lo yebecha elzar v'lo sishtach avel enechar. In other words, the problems are not external to you. The problems are internal to us. More often than not, when we face our failures, when we face our inadequacies, we're so quick to blame them on external circumstances. It's not my fault, Hashem. Right? The economy was down this year. It's not my fault, Hashem. Coronavirus happened. Hashem says, no. It's internal. The Yetzer Hara is internal to every single one of us. It's within you. And if the problem is within you, then you know what else is within you, Hashem says? Then the solution is within you as well. Lo yabecha elzar, v'lo sishtachavel ne'el nechar. Don't give in to your Yetzirah. Don't give in to that inner voice, which is telling you that you're not good enough, and strong enough, and capable enough to change and to be a better person next year. Hashem says, no. Don't give in to that voice. Anochi Adonai Elohecha amalcha me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. In other words, I can do anything. And if I've provided the salvation, keherifayin, like a blink of an eye back then I can do it now as well, Hashem says. And then the three most beautiful words, I think, of this entire chapter, Hashem looks at us and says, Harchev picha ve'amaleu. Open your mouth and I will fill it. Now, we say this not only in the Shir Shayom of Thursday, chapter 81. Where else do we say this? We say it every morning in Pesukah Dezimah right before Mizmor Lesoda, in that few paragraphs of many psukim brought together, of Hodu Lashem, right? In the end of that, we say this line of Harchev Picha Ve'amaleu. Open your mouth and I will fill it. What is that talking about? So Rashi says a beautiful pshat. Rashi says, what does it mean, open your mouth? Hashem says, Lish'ol mimenu kol tova tavas libcha. Hashem says, ask me anything your heart desires. There's nothing too big. There's nothing too small. There's nothing too trivial. Hashem says, whatever it is that's on your mind, I want you to come to me and I want you to talk to me about it. Don't be afraid. Don't hold back. Right? Be real with me, Hashem says. Harchev picha. Open up your mouth wide. Whatever it is that's on your mind, I want to hear and let me answer your tefillos. Let me share with you, though, a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, Maseches Tainis Per Gimel, says the following. V'Rav Shimon ben Lakish Amar. Im sadarta tefila. If you're going to daven to Hashem, lo tehei meitzar picha. Your mouth shouldn't be narrow. Ella harchev picha ve'amaleu. Rather, your mouth should be wide. What is the Yerushalmi talking about? That our mouth shouldn't be narrow, it should be wide? Does this mean that before we go into shul every morning, we should stretch out our mouths, right? So no, that's not what it's talking about. What the Yerushalmi is talking about is that you and I shouldn't think small. Lo te meitzar picha means that don't think small, right? Some of us, when we come into our Shmoneh Esreis, and we spoke about this a little bit in, I don't remember if it was our Tehillim class or our Parsha class, right? But some of us come into davening, and what we ask for is so trivial and so inconsequential, so like silly. And it's almost like you're wasting the opportunity that you have before the Almighty. Here you are, you're standing before the creator of the universe, the person who's singularly capable of answering all your tefillos. And what we ask for the Red Sox to win the World Series, right? We ask for that when I go to negotiate with my new car, the lease, that the negotiation should go well. Right now, all that's important. But the Yerushalmi encourages us, lo te meitzar picha ela harchi picha. Open up your mouth. In other words, open up your mind, right? Don't just think small, but rather think of things big, right? Think of the biggest problems that you are facing. Ask for those also. There's a very famous maisa of the Divrei Chaim of Sanz. Divrei Chaim of Sanz was famous for the tishin that he used to organize. And one day he was sitting at a tish and he calls over a shamish sitting next to him. He says, you see that guy? That guy is going to get the biggest piece of chicken out of everyone here. Sure enough, the guy was the poorest guy. Sure enough, the plates of chicken are getting passed around. Comes to this poor guy, and the poor guy gets the biggest piece of chicken. So the shamish looks at the Rebbe. He says, I understand. How'd you know? How'd you know that this poor guy was going to get the biggest piece of chicken? So the Rebbe says, because I know that poor guy. That poor guy's a big tzaddik. Anything he asks for, Hashem's going to give him. But because he's so small-minded, all he asks for Hashem is the big piece of chicken. And so that's what he's going to get. In other words, the point of the story is that this guy would have gotten whatever he wanted. He's such a tzaddik, whatever he asked Hashem for, Hashem would have given to him. But because he was so narrow-minded, all he wanted was that piece of chicken, that's all he got. Whereas if he had harche picha ve'amaleu, if he had expanded himself, if he had asked for more, he would have gotten that much more. Right? Think about the genie in the bottle. Right? Hashem is essentially saying, every opportunity to talk to me is an opportunity for me to fulfill your wishes, fulfill your desires. Don't think so narrow-mindedly. Don't think so small, but think a little bit bigger. I think it's a beautiful understanding, according to the Yerushalmi, of this pasuk. So what happens? Hashem comes to us, he says, I've given you the capacity for renewal. I've given you the capacity to start again. Yosef, Mitzrayim, I've given you instances in Tanakh to look to motivate you. All I asked for is that you listen to me and you don't succumb to your Yitzhahara and to forces around you. But what happens tragically? What do the Jewish people do? Pasuk 12, V'lo shama amila koli. But we, the Jewish people, time and time again, we don't listen to Hashem. The Malbim points out that as a result of this, what happens? Hashem removes his hashkacha pratis from us. Hashem removes his divine providence from us. V'lo shama amila koli. Tragically, Hashem laments. You can almost hear Hashem crying here, that my people didn't listen to my voice. V'Yisrael lo avali, the Jewish people did not, here it says obey, the Metzudah Sion says, v'lo ratzali, they didn't want me. Again, like think of it like a parent, where a parent just tells a child, I want to love you, and I want to do what's best for you, and I want to give to you. All I ask is that you play by the family rules. And time and time again, the child makes bad decisions, and he rejects the parents. So eventually the parent's going to come to him and says, like, I wanted to give to you, and I want to do what's best for you, but you didn't want me. You never wanted that relationship, Hashem says. It's so, you almost like feel the pain in Pasuk 12. Pasuk 13, V'ashalcheu b'shirus libam. And what does Hashem say? Hashem says, okay, you don't want that relationship with me? V'ashalcheu, I'm going to send you out. Tzudas David says, here it means exile. And I'm throwing you out. B'shirus libam, shirus means comes from the language of like carry. In other words, Hashem says, you want to be on your own? Fine, I'll be on your own. Again, think of the analogy of a parent. Then when a child rebels against the parent's going to plead with them, please just listen to me. Child continues to rebel. Eventually, the parent's going to say, fine. You want to be on your own? Go for it. But I'm cutting you off from the bank account, and I'm locking the doors. And right, because you want to be like that? You can be like that. Bishurus labam. Hashem says, you guys want to be on your own? Fine. Let me know how that goes. Yelchu b'moatzoseim. You'll be left to your own devices. I'm not going to shower you with my providence. I'm not going to guide you anymore. I'm not going to be there for you anymore, Hashem says. You're going to sleep in the bed that you made for yourselves. Lua misham shomeali. Hashem says, again, he's like crying out. If only my people would have listened to me. Yisrael b'darcha yalechu. If only they would have followed my path. Kim'at oiveya machnia. Then I would have subdued, I would have gotten rid of. Kim'at, like mima'et. Rashi says, b'sham u'etes ha'yisi machnia oivehem. I would have, in like a very short period of time, I would have gotten rid of all of your enemies. Again, and those are spiritual enemies and physical enemies. Those are enemies within us, like our Yitzhahara. They're external enemies to us. Hashem says, very quickly, I could have gotten rid of all this. Ve'al tsareim ashiv yadi, and I could have struck back against them. I could have gotten rid of all the things that are annoying you. Misonei Adonai yichashu lo vayi itam le'olam. Right, Hashem says again, that same notion of I could have gotten, I could have minimized those who hated us. And what would I have done? Pasuk 17, Ve'achelu mechelev chita. Talking now to the Jewish people, that if you come back to me, the door is always open. And when you come back to me, you'll eat from the finest wheat. Umitzur devash aspieka. And I will satiate you from the honey of a rock. Now, isn't that a strange imagery? The honey of a rock. Have you ever seen honey come from a rock? I have not seen honey come from a rock. Says the Malbim, that's the whole point. Is Hashem is essentially telling the Jewish people, don't forget, we're the Jewish people now. We're in the bleakest moment. We are the grapes in the wine press. We are being beaten down and trampled on. And Hashem says, Umitzur devash aspieka, that even when things seem so ridiculous, even when things seem so implausible, Hashem says, I can do anything. I can even make the honey and goodness come from the rock. You guys think that you're caught between the rock and the hard place, that COVID has no solution, right? Hashem says, if I can make honey come from a rock, do you think I can find a solution to COVID? Darn right I can, right? You think that the financial system is going to collapse and presidential elections in America, right? You think everything's so bleak, Hashem says? Umitzur, devash aspieka. I'm going to satiate you from the honey of a rock, and if I can do that, then guess what? Hashem says, I can do anything. And if I can do anything, you know what you should really do? You should really put your faith in me. Because it's kind of paradoxical that you and I put our faith in a lot of things. We put our faith in our 401ks. We put our faith in the stock market. We put our faith in our salaries. We put our faith in, right, in church. We put our faith in lots of things, none of which are really foolproof if you think about it, right? And when we need things, we have avenues to where we go. But Hashem says, there's one, hello, remember me, Hashem says? I'm the one who can do anything. I'm the one who can create honey out of rocks. And if I can do that, then maybe you should talk to me because I could help you out of any precarious situation you find yourself in. You think you're caught between a rock and a hard place? I can make honey come from that rock. I can turn anything on its head. And that's the theme of this entire chapter of Tehillim. It's a song to Hashem. It's a song to Hashem where Hashem is essentially looking at us. And he's saying that no matter how many times you fall, and no matter how bleak the situation goes, you can always start over again, again and again and again and again. Because I did it for Yosef, and I did it for the Jews in Mitzrayim, and I'll do it for you. And so what makes this chapter so unique, you can't say so unique, what makes this chapter unique is because it's almost like Hashem is looking at every single one of us. And he's begging us to follow him. And so it's not just how we feel about Hashem, which is most chapters of Tehillim, but it's about how Hashem feels about us. It's the pain that Hashem feels when we fail to follow him. It's the pain that Hashem feels when it's lo avali, when it's as if he feels that we don't want that relationship with him. But it's also about that notion of redemption and that notion of renewal. Why was this chosen as the song of the day on Rosh Hashanah and the Beis HaMikdash? So you'll tell me, Rabbi Moskowitz, the answer is very simple. That this was chosen as the song of the day on Rosh Hashanah because of the pasuk, Tiku b'chodesh shofar, because on Rosh Hashanah you blow the shofar. Okay, right? That's like a chicken and egg. Why is that Rosh Hashanah? This entire chapter, my friends, is about reminding ourselves that we can change, that we can renew anything, that we have the ability to start again. And that Hashem says that if you doubt that, and you say things look so bleak, how could I ever change? And how could I ever start again? Hashem says, I've done in the past and I'll do it for you again. I did it with Yosef HaTzadik. I did it with the Jews in Mitzrayim. I'll do it with you. And if I can make honey come from a rock, then I can do anything under the sun, no matter what is bothering you, no matter what is troubling you, no matter what is difficult in your life, says Hashem, don't give up hope, because I can do anything. Put your faith in me. Put your faith in me, Hashem says. Don't give up on your relationship with me. Because umitzur, from a rock, dvash aspieka, I will make something sweet come out of it. So even though the Jewish people are lamenatzeach ala gitis, even though we are in the gat, even though we are in the wine press and we feel like we're beaten down, how much more of this COVID can we take? Not seeing family, the loneliness, the depression, the anxiety, how much more of this can we take? We are literally the grapes in the wine press. And yet what do? We sing this song to Hashem because we recognize Yeshua's Hashem keherifayin, that Hashem can change things on a dime. This chapter, more than anything else, is a chapter about renewal. I was so excited about this, I really wanted to wait until closer to Rosh Hashanah to study it with you, but I was so excited about it, I couldn't wait. I wanted to share the idea with you because I think it's an idea that's so motivating. Even in Elul, even before Rosh Hashanah, it's an idea that motivates us to want to change, to want to shed bad habits and destructive habits, and again, to put our faith in Hashem that this year is going to be the best year, that no matter what happened in the past is water under the bridge, you and I are ready for a new start, for that transformation as we enter into the year 5781. I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos, a meaningful Shabbos, and a Shabbos filled